Digital 410 Productions proudly presents the What's in Your Head podcast.
Digitized live from
your company name here.
Your studios in Cape Coral, Florida. It's the What's in Your Head podcast.
What's up? What's up? OG5. Welcome to another episode of the What's in Your Head podcast. It's almost time for school. Saturday, just the Don super annoyed that he couldn't play the Battlefield promo because the current queue at 8:30, 155,140 people waiting to get on that goddamn server. So
I think I was at 8,000 earlier or something like that.
That's insane. And I think within the last 2 days, they've already reported they've caught like 30,000 people trying to run cheat codes and shit. Which they, first and foremost, I get it. A lot of you fuckers are out there making money because you're streamers. I don't know what douchebag streamer likes to watch somebody who runs a fucking aimbot.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you got to run an aimbot, I want to like degrade you and say, haha, you suck. But you've, a lot of you assholes have figured out a way to make money off of sucking at games by running game bots. I will say, when I was an Xbox player before my power supply went out, I hated playing games with console, with PC players because of that.
Yeah. Well, they're running the anti-cheat softwares and whatnot, but I guess that's so, if you know anything about computers, it's easily...
Well, not only that, but the anti-cheat...
It's an easy get around.
The anti-cheat doesn't always work because I got kicked off of DayZ for just playing a game, and it said kicked off for cheating. I'm like, motherfucker, I ain't cheating.
Yeah.
I'm so paranoid. I don't want those cheating softwares on my computer because God knows what else is embedded in it, right? You're you're running an aimbot. Meanwhile, they're mining your computer for fucking credit card numbers and shit.
Yeah.
No. But they got to do something. I mean, it's going to kill the gaming community.
Yeah. It will.
How do you think the Ryan Trahans, the Beast, and all these YouTubers who make content for teenagers, how they're going to, you think they're going to be affected by the new YouTube policy?
What is the new YouTube policy?
Starting by the end of August, if they can't determine your age, I guess maybe by your content or by your data, if they feel you're under 18, they're going to make you see, it's interesting because most, if you're under 18, unless you're 16, you have a driver's license, but most people under 18 don't have a form of ID, but they're going to do something that requires you to upload a form of ID.
Yeah.
I guess they just won't let you watch shit. And if you're over 18, then you're going to have to upload your ID. I don't anticipate my 47-year-old ass being asked to upload anything. But like if you're 18, 19, and 20, well, obviously those guys, they make content for kids. So I don't know how it's going to affect their views. But then the overall, the audience who's like between 18 and, I don't know, 25 or whatever, I guess they're counting on them to be so trusting that they're going to be dumb enough to upload it. I have a problem with uploading my driver's license to prove my age, right? I don't know if it's the old guy in me or the paranoid guy or what, or maybe I'm just because I'm an IT guy and I realize how many large companies get hacked on a regular basis, you know.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting to see how people's views and revenues affected by it.
I'd be interested to see how many of our young YouTubers out there end up being affected by this.
Yeah. Right.
Underage YouTubers. I mean, not just, you know, people who watch, but people who put content out, you know, kids that have channels and whatnot. How that's going to affect them. Because if, you know, if they're going to age verify people who watch YouTube, then they're going to have to age verify people who create content for YouTube as well.
But I imagine those kids, if you're below 18 or 16 for that matter, I imagine you're going to have some sort of parental intervention, because if you're below 16, you're not old enough to have a PayPal account or any other sort of account for YouTube to deposit that money into anyhow. Right.
True.
In order to get paid, for example, I think YouTube sends the money to Google Payment, and then whatever bank account you put in there, that's how they deposit the money.
Sure.
So you're already going to have somewhat of a parental intervention because they're going to have to open up the bank account and then they're going to have to co-sign on it and all the taxes and shit anyhow. But it'd
Sure.
definitely be interesting to see. They're already doing it in Europe. And the kids have already started getting around it because they do facial recognition too.
Yeah.
They're doing facial
Yeah.
scans with cameras. And so kids have found out like you can use Norman Reedus's picture on one of the video games where they're animated as. So they're just holding up a video game on their fucking cell phones or their monitors of the computers that trick the AI into letting them in. So they're already finding ways around it.
People aren't dumb. Kids aren't dumb. I mean, you know, kids are, even though, I mean, even kids like my son, you know, he's 13. So he already, I'm sure, has figured out workarounds for all kinds of different shit where I would have never thought to figure out how to do that. You know, I mean, I figured out workarounds for things that I, you know, when I was his age, you know, when technology was a little bit dumbed down, even for then. You know, so, but yeah, I think that's always going to be a factor, is that somebody's always going to be able to figure out a way around it, no matter what. You're not going to be able to tighten it up
I just,
100%.
is it a Gen Z thing to be so jaded, Morgan? Or are you jaded too, Mike? Are you millennials
I'm
as
pretty
jaded as
I'm
we are?
yeah, I'm pretty jaded. I mean, I wouldn't say that, you know. I don't know. I'd just say, yeah, I'm pretty jaded, I
Well, let me
guess.
give you an example why I'm so jaded. So, I don't know, like last time I was in Kentucky or whatever, it was like last October, it was almost a year ago, but not quite. When I was up there for my mom's surgery, that's when Instagram started promoting on YouTube and on Pandora the new teen accounts.
Yeah.
You have teenagers. Sign up for a teen account. We care about your security. And I'm like, sure you do. People have been blaming
Bullshit.
you for the last 15 years for creating comparison culture, the increase of the teenage suicide, yada, 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 pedophilia, trafficking. Now all of a sudden you care. I'm not saying it's a bad thing that they have it, but come on. I'm so jaded. It's hard for me to know. The truth is, Meta stock went down. Everybody's moving over to TikTok. There's this scare about TikTok. So let's go after the parents. Hey, bring your kids over to Instagram. We have these new teen accounts.
Yeah.
But then 2 days ago, I don't know if you guys are aware of this, Instagram announced a new feature. It's disabled right now by default, but I'm sure it'll be enabled. Photo sharing, where they basically people can go on a map and see exactly where you are based on where you posted your last photo from.
Yep.
So the jaded guy in me is like, oh, this is why you guys started that teen account 6 months ago because you didn't want people to blame Instagram for fucking teenage abduction when you pushed out this new live map bullshit. And so you had to go ahead and get out in front of it, do a 6 month buffer. Hey, we try to tell everybody to put their teens on the teen account. So I'm just so jaded. It's like, oh, it all, when I see shit like that, it's like, oh, it all makes sense now. I'm not saying it's true, but that's how my jaded mind works. Like, oh, I get it now. Because I knew it. Because it can't possibly be because they care. Or otherwise,
Yeah.
they would have fixed this shit 15 years ago when people were pointing out in the news, like, studies showed due to the, ever since the advent of Instagram, comparison culture and teenage suicides, particularly among women, have gone through the fucking roof. Instagram.
Well, I figured they just got sued enough times for something that, you know, they had to do something to placate people so they quit getting sued.
I
What
would
would you
agree
think?
with you if it wasn't for the fact that it seems like anything that has to do with elites and corporate and pedophilia doesn't see the day of light and never goes to fucking court, right? I mean, we all remember when the P. Diddy story first came out, they're talking about the kids involved. By the time that shit wrapped up, they weren't talking about the pedophile side of that. It was all about what celebrity was involved, right? Then we all saw what happened to the Epstein list, and it just seems like anytime
What
anything like
list?
that happened, it seems like, oh, we're going to ignore that.
So I got a question.
I got an answer.
So why is what's her name? Ghislaine Maxwell. Why
Ghislaine,
is
yeah.
she still in jail?
Why isn't he in? Oh, why is she in jail?
No, why is she's still in jail? Because she was trafficking kids to who?
Nobody.
If there's no provable client, why is
Right.
she still in jail?
Because
I mean, I think she belongs there, but you know, I'm just saying from a legal definition, if there is no list of people that were her clientele.
the answer, she sold to the protected class. Why are they called the protected class? They're fucking protected. Are you not that I want to start the show off on such a grotesque topic, but it's out there. Are you guys up to speed? Are you been watching the Candace Owen thing?
Not much.
No.
So about 6 months ago, Candace Owens became aware of this book about the wife of the president of France. Okay. And just
I think we discussed that topic a little bit about that whole ring
thing, yeah, well,
that they were involved in.
They're currently suing her.
Right.
They're suing the author of the book for cyberbullying, and they're suing her for slander, which she's not backing down. She wants to take it. But what's interesting is when you watch the news, everybody talks about, back to my previous point, the president of France is suing Candace Owen for calling his wife a dude. That's not the truth.
Yeah.
Candace Owen is pointing out the fact that he was a dude who was his teacher when the president was 14, thus the guy was a pedophile and groomed him, and then gets into the pedophilia stuff that we talked about. But they don't want to talk because, once again, that they don't do that. So their whole thing is she's just bullying him, calling him a chick, and she's obsessed with the fact that he's a dude. She don't care it's a dude. She's just pointing out the fact that the dude is the tip of the iceberg to all the pedophilia shit.
Yeah.
That's the stuff they don't want to talk about, and that's the stuff they don't want to mention. And so
right.
It'll be interesting if they actually do take it to court. I will say it is a little sketchy that their proof, which, by the way, in the United States, you couldn't even use this to get a goddamn driver's license. Their proof that she was born a female was a digital copy of a newspaper clipping that the aunt put out announcing her birth. Mike, I could go in the newspaper tomorrow and say Morgan and I just got married. It doesn't make it so. You're not going to go get a mortgage loan with this newspaper clipping. This is their evidence, right? Which, by the way, in her last episode, she pointed out that that newspaper clipping that was uploaded to the historical database for that city was uploaded a few years ago by a dude with the same last name that they think is a family member, and then has since... The website has since removed his name from an archivist, but the way they're able to prove that he was the archivist at the time is by going back to waybackmachine.com, which you can do right now. If you guys go to waybackmachine.com, put in D-410, it'll show you what that website, my website, looked like in 2002. So, I mean, it has all the information, but it's just, I'm hoping that all this stuff combined, the Epstein, the P. Diddy, the Candace Owen thing, hopefully this is an indicator that this elite protected class that we've heard about since going back to the Roman days of fucking powerful pedophilias is starting to crumble, and, you know, people will start to make people responsible for the shit. Cause that is the worst crime. I mean, you can go to any prison, right? Yeah. When there's a prison, right? Who's the first person who gets shanked? The pedos, you know, yeah. Across the boards, the Aryans, the blacks, the Mexicans, they may hate each other. 365 days a week, but as soon as that riot kicks off, they're like, hey, fellas, let's go get the pedos. They can all agree on that. One thing they can all agree on. So hopefully there's something to come down about that. Before we get into your topic, one more thing. Did you hear about Walmart and Kroger starting their new dynamic pricing?
I did Look see at, that they were putting up the digital tags at some of the Kroger stores.
Yeah, but when people hear digital tags, they think of like the signs that Kohl's have had for years, where it's just a sign digitally displaying. No, these are These are tags that they can adjust the price at any point in the day, or more conspiratorially, which Delta has been accused of, they can adjust the price based on the geographical location of the store, where if you're and Marco Island, your shit's going to be a lot more expensive than if you're at the Walmart closest to MLK. And so, but what's even, but I kind of get that, right? Because it's a physical store. You know, you have, each store has different fucking personnel. Maybe their rent's higher. The insurance is higher, depending or less.
Transportation costs are different.
But Delta has been accused of, when you go to buy tickets on Delta, they're being accused of inflating the prices based on your personal data that's shared to the server. For example, Mike, if you were out looking at boats yesterday, I was out filling out forms to get food stamps. your Delta plane ticket would cost substantially more than mine would, that they're actually adjusting prices based off of people's browsing habits and their potential for income.
Yeah, total bullshit.
Gross is that?
That's total bullshit.
Yeah, complete.
So before bullshit. I try to book my next plane ticket, I'll just Google a bunch of EBT stuff. And
I made that joke to my boss that just, if this shit goes widespread, we'll all just go to Walmart and buy flip phones and have two phones, and one of them will just be social security checks and EBT cards. But then
I apply for SSI?
But then right now it only happens to Delta, and we all three know we're all frontier people.
What are you talking about? I'm fucking Spirit Airlines.
Oh, shit's so painful. I learned that lesson the hard way. Because when I went up for my mom's surgery and then the hurricane came, I flew up there on Frontier and I booked through cheap tickets. And my flight, it was getting crazy. I like lost money on a ticket because I had to cancel a flight and book a new ticket. And then it got canceled because of it was crazy. I lost money and I could not get money back through Frontier. But with Delta or one of the bigger ones, they offer protection on that. But yeah, those are such a scam. With the Frontier, you show up and you'll be sitting at the goddamn gate and your cell phone will go, like, you better buy your ticket via the app or it's going to get a lot more expensive if you do it at the gate. They milk you. It's so gross.
Hell yeah.
I was actually checking out your old archives of the old digital 410 page.
A lot of it's broke because the images are gone.
Yeah, from 2003.
Yeah. I started d-410.com as a website to troubleshoot because that's when I got my first job in IT working for Lunar Pages, and I needed a website to understand how websites work.
And what do you know? We've got d-410.com's forum, What's in Your Head, has its own URL.
What's in your head?
All the way from back in 2003, folks.
Yeah, What's in Your Head was originally a forum that me and my brothers ran. We actually had a pretty decent membership back then, back when people used forums all the time.
Yep, we've got archives from 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 8, 10, 11, 12, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22,
23, 24, 25. 2003 is when I... Actually, 2002 is when I got the job. So I guess that website didn't start until 2003. I remember when Google came online.
Really?
Yeah.
What was before that? Wasn't it, was ask.com before Google?
Yeah, Yahoo was the big one.
Yahoo, yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, AOL was a search engine back then too, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Or ask Jeeves, yeah. But that was ask.com before it was ask.com, right? It was
Ask Jeeves.
Were you?
Yeah.
Yep. Were you dial up, Don?
Oh yeah. Back in the day, I go so far back. Actually, technically, it's my brother. My dad got us our first Tandy, and then we had a Hewlett Packard before the HP. It was literally Hewlett Packard. My dad got at a Radio Shack. I've been online since Windows 3.1, but my brother was a bigger computer nerd than I was because he was older than me, right? So he was in high school and I was in middle school, and so back when they had CompuServe. And we didn't do AOL because that shit was too high. That was too bougie. Before that, it was just you dial onto the internet and you'd have to discover BBS's bulletin board systems. We had CompuServe. We remember CompuServe. My brother was running a BBS on my dad's computer. My dad got pissed because he didn't want people to hack in his shit because it had all his work stuff on there. But technically, my brother was running a website out of my dad's computer and out of our house in 1993. That's how far back we go.
Wow.
And then my dad locked down the computer where basically all we could use was Microsoft Word and Paint. And so I didn't do anything computer-related since 1995, 96, 97, 98, 90, my high school years, no computer. I went to my buddy Steve's house. He had, Doom and all that shit. I played computer games, but actively. And then I didn't get my first personal computer until I got married in 2001. Everybody was on AOL, but we couldn't afford that shit. We were doing the, I think we talked about this before, the free minute special. So you forget, kids, how everything used to be billed by minutes back in the day. Your cell phone was minutes, internet was minutes. So what you could do is get promo packs. You go down to Kmart, get Kmart Blue Light, and you can get a free 60 minutes a month. Like, wow, an hour a month, that's not a whole lot of time. But then you'd go to the grocery store and get the AOL free night 60 minutes a month, and then you'd get the Juno free 60 minutes a month. And then so basically you would have four different ISPs, four different email addresses installed on your computer, and then when you ran out of time, it may have been like 3 hours a month or something, you would just rotate providers. So you'd switch from AOL to Juno to Juno to Kmart Blue Light, and you would just rotate.
Kmart Blue Light. I vaguely
Kmart
remember
had
that.
Their own. And it was so funny. I remember when burnable CDs came out, because that's right, kids. I started working with computers on a regular basis, and right after 9/11, after I got laid off from the like I said, I had my computer in 2001, so or 2000, but I moved to California in 2003, and that's when burnable CDs started making. They've been around a while, but that's when they started making to the home market where they're affordable for people. And when you used to go to grocery stores, they'd have the big, as soon as you walk in, they'd have the big tower of the AOL free minute CDs. And I was there one day, and the AOL lady was swapping them out, taking out the old one to put out the new version. And I was like, you guys really need to start putting those on CDRW so you can stop filling the landfills with them. She gave me a dirty look, because it would make them so much more sense just to go reburn that shit instead of, could you? The amount of CDs that have to be in landfills from between 2001 and fucking 5 minutes ago is insane. There's got to be so many CDs in landfills.
Was CDR was CD read?
And then
RW was rewrite?
Yeah, but originally it was one time. The rewrites were the second level. First one was CDR. You could write it, but that was it. It was one and done. So it wasn't until the RWs where you could rewrite came out.
So you could completely wipe the CD clean, and then
it was like a USB. It was like a basically
a stick, right?
Kind of like a USB stick. Yeah, you can delete it and reburn it X amount of times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then that's
my son's X-rays from 10 years ago for his finger are on a CD, and I have to have them. He has to get new set of X-rays, and we're going through that process so he can get his finger fixed, because it's actually, he broke it when he was real young,
mm-hmm.
and it'd be broken on the growth plate. So it curves. So instead of it being
isn't that
straight,
in
it curves in like this.
Growth plate?
Huh?
Not,
what'd you say?
Isn't that in California, the growth plate?
Yeah. So we have to get his X-rays done. And I was like, well, I was talking to his doctor, and I was like, can you guys do anything with this? I was like, I have all of his old X-rays on here. They were like, actually we can. I was like, really? And he was like, yeah, you can take it down to radiology, which is in the same building. And he was like, they'll upload it into the system, so they have all that shit on file. So
90% of my clients with the company I work for are ear, nose, and throat doctors.
Yeah.
And we're constantly sending them CD burners from Amazon, because the medical industry, especially because of their patient's age, people are bringing X-rays and CAT scan files in on CDs, not on USB flash drives, on CDs. Mm-hmm. So the medical industry alone is keeping the CDRW and the DVD player market alive.
And they're also keeping the fax machine industry alive.
Yeah.
Because they do 90% of their data transmission by fax.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's not always on connection.
Yeah.
It adds security. I mean, they do use faxes, but one of my old clients, they may have changed now, this is a few years ago, but they were a physical therapist, and I actually had to find it. I had to put a fax modem in their server, because one particular company would do their transmission over fax line, because it was so antiquated, but it wasn't a constant connection. It's technically secure because that connection always changed.
Was that through
what's interesting
through
about
the phones?
That.
Mm-hmm.
It was through the phones.
The beetle, beetle.
At my last job, I used to be one. My fax number was one number off from a doctor's office, so I would get people's personal medical information. If I, I'd go in the morning and pull my stack of faxes off.
Sheila's got chlamydia again.
Here's Bertha's radiology, results. And I'd call the doctor's office, and I'm like, don't you people verify the number that you're sending this stuff to? Fortunately, it's coming to me, and I'm going to call you and tell you that you need to resend it to the right number,
Well,
and I'm going to drop it in the shredder without looking at
they say,
it.
sir, we get a fax report from your fax machine every time, so we need confirmation that the fax was delivered.
But I after about the 15th time in a week, I'm like, aren't you people concerned about your HIPAA stuff? And they're like, yeah, what are you talking about?
That's
It's got to be
a
some kind
big
of a HIPAA
violation.
violation that you
Oh, it's
sent it to
huge.
me,
It's
because
huge.
I've got 15 pages of this person's medical records.
Yep,
If
it's
I was
huge.
some sort of nefarious individual, y'all would be screwed.
Hell, you could have probably told that person, call, figured out how to call them, or maybe they had their phone number on their paperwork and went, hey, by the way, your doctor's office is fucking you with your paperwork. It's
Oh
all being
yeah.
faxed to me. You might have a good lawsuit on your hands right here.
And for a nominal fee, I would be willing to
Yeah.
testify.
Yeah. Just give me a cool 1.5 and I'm good.
Cool whip.
Cool whip.
So right now, if you head over to d-410.com, and actually no, go to youtube.com, look at D410 Media. I just uploaded the video that Mike and I shot together of the Inferno 25K and 5K. Boy, I was a fucking
Yeah, good job.
wasn't it?
You made it.
It
Hey.
seemed a lot hotter than 85 degrees out there.
It was fucking brutal. Dude, I was underneath a tent. It was brutal. With a
I
fan on me,
noticed
I was still sweating.
in some of the tripod video, people finally started manning their way over to use their tent.
There was two ladies and a fella, and they came from behind. They were and parked over by the cars that were by the trucks, and they were like, "Hey, can we borrow your shade?" I was like, "Yeah, go ahead."
Yeah.
And we were just, they were, I mean, they didn't say hardly two words to me, but I was like, whatever, who cares?
Well, I mean,
So I haven't seen the video yet. Is it like a road race, or is it like
technically,
a
it's a trail
trail
race.
type race?
It was a
Okay.
Harns Marsh, a 4 mile trail in Lehigh.
Okay.
It's a hybrid, really. It starts out as standard gravel and dirt utility road, and then parts of it, depending on where you're at on the property, turns into old, what used to be paved utility roads, and then you're dealing with that. And then parts of it is just sand, and then parts of it's just overgrown grass. So you get the whole ambiance while you're out there. And there might be three trees over the path during the entire race. So for all intents and purposes, it's out in the open, hot, open Florida sun. And the first thing I noticed when I got there, and granted, they're the 5Kers, they're only out there for 45, 50 minutes at most. But the amount of people who are wearing all black, black t-shirt, black shorts,
Oh.
I'm like, well, good thing you're running from 7:30 to 8:30. But I planned ahead because originally it was supposed to be a 50K, but people were too smart to sign up to fucking beat themselves up for 35 miles in the goddamn
Yeah,
heat.
and good thing, because good thing you didn't sign up for that shit.
Oh, I wouldn't have
You'd
finished.
have definitely got a DNF on that one.
I wouldn't have finished it, but I had my white casking shirt on, my white casking. Well, I had my white cap on for the first 4 miles, and then when I came back, because it was four mile loops, and then I switched to my bucket hat and I put ice in it. And the thing that I'm glad we did, I planned ahead. Mike brought his cooler, which was big enough. I had my Nathan's running hydration vest, and then I had my off-brand one that I bought first. And so while I was wearing one, the other one was sitting in the cooler.
Cooling down.
Packs all in it. So then every 4 miles, I'd swap it out and get the cooling from that
Nice.
while. So that was helpful. But one of my,
Yeah.
go ahead, Mike.
No, I was just gonna say we were every lap we were swapping those out. It was refilling everything, making sure water was good to go, Gatorades, all that kind of shit. And every lap, well, the first lap, I had to try and get some footage of the 5K that finished,
Yeah.
and then laps 2, 3, and then the finish, I was over there, and we were swapping out the packs and everything, and trying to make sure that you stay hydrated and stay at least put something in your stomach for
I
sure. But
basically ran the 25K a little overkill,
yeah,
but we ran it like the way I planned to do the 50K. So
right.
instead of adjusting it, just because I knew it was so hot. And one of my concerns was rhabdo thrombosis, which is a kidney failure, you can suffer from dehydration and overexertion.
Right.
And so I don't know if you can get rhabdo on a 25K, but you can definitely get it on a 50 or more. And basically what happens, you don't drink enough, then you get, you stop pissing, and then your kidneys shut down. And when you do piss, it looks like coffee, and you can end up in the hospital.
Yeah.
So I overhydrated, but more important or more bad choice, I took too many salt tablets. So I took two salt sticks before the race. One of them had caffeine, the other one didn't. And then I was drinking, but I was so concerned about dehydration. Well, and the other worst thing about dehydration is dehydration leads to lactic acid buildup, which leads to cramps. And I'd suffered through my first Savage race. And then, so by the time I did my third and fourth Savage races and my two Rugged Maniacs, I had that lactic acid problem whipped. I drink plenty of Gatorade and never was a problem. And so that was my other concern too. And so, but I ended up overhydrating because in between, I think loop two and three, I took another salt stick. By the end of lap three, my calves were cramping up so bad that I couldn't jog. I walked the last 5 miles of that race, but by the end of it, my hands were hurting. And I thought it was just from doing this. I looked down, my hands are swollen up like I got stung by a fucking wasp. Yeah,
he was bloated like he was getting stung by bees or something.
I probably gained 5 pounds during that race. Yeah. It's not in the video. I took it out. I had my shirt off, and I look like I gained back all the weight I lost.
Yeah.
And I was talking to my buddy Zach tonight, and he's in his close to 70s now, but he's like, you know, that's so funny. He said, my family were down here about 3 weeks ago, and I went out and bought a ham. And I'm the only person that ate this ham. He said, I killed this ham for like 3 days straight. He said, damn, that ham was salty. He said, the next thing I looked down, he said, my ankles are this fucking big. He said, I gained 6 pounds in 4 days from eating salted ham. And it took me forever to realize it was the salt content. For those of you guys who don't know, salt makes your body retain water. For example, you may never put two and two together, but if you're ever in the same lunchroom or gymnasium with a wrestling team in middle school and weigh-ins were coming up, and little Johnny's a little scrawny and he had to get his coach to tell him to take his salt pills and then drink it. That's why it actually makes your body retain water.
So you stay in your upper weight class.
Yeah. And in the series Pacific, when they're on Pelu, you hear Haney tell them to take their salt tabs so they don't get dehydrated. I did look, speaking of that, they didn't have that classification because I was like, ooh, I wonder what the if there's a registered count for how many Marines experience that kidney failure, that rhabdo.
Yeah.
They didn't have that definition back then, but that basically that was their fatigue dropout, was basically dehydration with muscle fatigue and kidney problems. I could not imagine trying to fight in those conditions.
Yeah.
Imagine being out hotter than what you dealt with at Harns Marsh, but then combined with people shooting at you. Jesus Christ. It's insane.
Yeah, I know. At least every day when I was in basic training in South Carolina, I mean, we had a heat index of anywhere from 105 to 115 every day because I went during the summer. I was there from June, whatever day it was. I think it was like midway through June all the way to like August 18th or something like that. So, I mean, yeah, it fucking sucks. And imagine that. And then, like you said, having somebody shooting at you on top of that.
Mortar. God,
I couldn't imagine that. Yeah.
Pillory. No. Strafing.
No.
Back to the race. I'm glad I brought a change of shoes because I went out there with my regular street shoes, my Brooks, because I'm like, it's not super crazy. I don't need trail shoes. But they had so many of those small pea gravel and then large. I could feel every rock, every stone under my foot. So when I came in between lap one and two, I changed my shoes out. I put my my trail running shoes on to have a thicker sole, so that helped tremendously.
Yeah,
I would stop to do my changeouts before I crossed the finish line. Right. So when I looked at my Strava, you would see right when I got by the finish line, my pace went through the fucking ceiling, and then as I crossed to start the next lap, it went down because that 5 or 10 minutes I was sitting was still registering as race time.
Right.
And so I finished the race. I had 10 minutes left. It ran from 7:30 to 12:30. So I almost DNF from time. I thought I was going to be dead fucking last, but this woman named, can't remember her fucking name. I say it in the video. She was behind me. She was dehydrated because she didn't consume enough water. She was fucking throwing up and shit. But she finished the race too. Monica was her name. Because my calves cramped up and I almost fell down. And then she came up behind me. She's like, "Your calves cramping up?" I was like, "Fuck yeah, they are." She's like, "Yeah, I had that happen to me once." And she's like, "I got down and couldn't stand up." She said to me, "You're not getting behind me." She's like, "We're finishing this shit together." And we suffered through it. We finished that shit together. But yeah, we finished it. One thing I've known this, but this reinforces it. I can go on athlinks.com and see all 21 races that I've ran registered. And granted, I've gotten older, but my times have gotten tremendously slower. And one of the biggest contributors to that is I no longer run with a group. My training runs are by myself. Right. Back in the day, I would go down to Edison on Sunday mornings and run with 20 people and run other people's. And so, like, if I look on my old races, perfect example. This was 3 miles more than a half marathon. When I look at the Marco Island half marathon, I did, granted it was in February, it wasn't so hot, so that's a big part of it too, but they have hills. I did a 9-minute mile. My average was a 9:31 pace for the entire half marathon back in 2019. With the stops, I think my average was 15 or 16. So I added 6 minutes to my, plus it's hotter than shit. But my point is, because I haven't ran with a group of people with the exception of races, I don't have anybody around to push me. So when I'm out doing my leisure races, there's times I'll walk quite a bit and I'm seeing that in my numbers. So I think I need to pick at least one day a week and go out and run with the people at the Cape Coral Run Club or the Fort Myers Run Club and start running with other people to force myself to actually not do what people refer to as garbage runs. So my pace is definitely slower than shit. So I'm going to work on that. And I might have to upgrade my watch. My Garmin's 6 years, 2019, and it's out of space. So I can't load integral programs and running programs that'll set off in your earbuds when you're running. You know, because you can download programs like run fast as you can for 30 seconds and tell you it stops. So my watch is so old, there's not enough space on it to do those apps. So I may have to break down and finally get a new watch, if for anything, to have some running programs. But I really need to, maybe on Tuesday or Thursday. I think Cape Coral Run Club runs like 3 times a week. One of them's a Wednesday, which would be out because of the podcast. But yeah, I think I need to go back and start running with groups of people again to kind of force me to run faster.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, overall, I think that was a great experience.
I got one. Definitely cool. I really wanted something that would force me to, you can quit at any fucking time.
Right.
You don't have to go back out for lap three. Right. I was walking by in lap three. I knew that lap four was going to suck. Right. I knew that I couldn't run. I could easily just said, fuck it. But I forced myself to go out.
Yeah.
Kind of what I was looking for. What was your experience being someone who's never been at a race before?
So as somebody who's been carrying a firearm for over 13 years daily, one of the biggest inconveniences is when you come home, you need to take your firearm off of yourself and put it somewhere safe, somewhere secure, especially if you have kids. Now, I know most of us are responsible. We have a gun safe somewhere, but let's be honest. Usually these gun safes are big, they're bulky, they're kind of out of the way because they're a bit of an eyesore. Your wife doesn't want them where everybody can see them. So sometimes they're in your closet behind some clothes, sometimes they're in the garage, sometimes they're in the mudroom. And let's be honest, taking your firearm out and walking to those locations to secure it is a pain in the butt, but you have to be a responsible firearm owner, especially if you have kids in the house. That's why you need to get yourself a StopBox Pro portable gun safe. You can make it non-portable. You can drill some holes in it, mount it to a place of convenience in your house, but it requires no batteries and no electricity. You simply come in your house, walk up to your safe, choose your finger button combinations, open a safe, remove your firearm from your person, put it in the safe. If you close your safe, just that easy, it's secure. So do yourself a favor, head over to StopBoxUSA.com/D410 and get all the information today on your StopBox Pro. When seconds count, trust the only non-fail firearm storage box, StopBox Pro, at StopBoxUSA.com/D410.
Awkward at first, because I don't really do very well around people. I'm usually pretty, I'm a loner a lot of the time. I kind of stick to myself. I don't really do very well in groups. I don't really, I mean, I, you know, we do all right because I know you guys, you know, but, you know, and family and, you know, family and friends and stuff like that. Yeah, I do okay. But crowds, not really good with crowds. And that was a huge turnout. I mean, for something that I wasn't expecting, you know, to see that, you know, I was thinking, okay, well, you know, we'll see.
Well, plus you heard
a few people.
You heard that the 50K was canceled, and you're like,
well, right.
But I think I heard out on the trail about 137 people did the 5K.
Yeah.
And yeah, about 30 people did the 25K.
So I mean, when you guys started, there was a lot of people. It took what, 30 seconds or so for everybody to get across the start line?
Well, that's exactly when you look at people's finishing times, that's why they have race time and chip time. Race time is the time the race actually started. The chip time is when you finally, especially like at the Boston Marathon, it could take you fucking 15 minutes before you get to the starting line.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, that's, you know, you got to, that's all that time in between from, you know, start the act, your actual start time. But,
when the chip
but time. Yeah, I mean, honestly, it was a cool experience. I got to, you know, I've realized I do like to film. I don't like talking to people though.
Sure.
And I don't really like the interaction so much, but I do like to do, like, you know, cause I did, you know, a little bit of B roll and stuff like that. But for the most part, I was trying to stick with where I was at because I didn't know when you were coming in. I kind of got that down, but once the 5K was over and all the, and the award ceremony, everything like that,
a lot
was
of
done,
time too.
Dude, like over probably three quarters of the attendance were gone.
Mm-hmm.
The parking lot cleared out. Like, you guys were on like lap two, you know, maybe pushing into lap three, and half of the attendance was gone already.
Because
probably three quarters of the attendance was gone.
You got to think the 5K, the podium runners on a 5K are probably running 5-6 minute miles.
That first kid that came back, the males from, what was it, like 16 to
16, he probably went around like
21
a 15-minute
like
race.
He was number one overall.
Yeah, he's like 15-minute 3-mile run. Like the entire three.
It was nutty.
He's doing 6-minute miles.
Was he from
the
Fort,
gun went
Fort
off.
Myers?
Huh?
Was he from Fort Myers High?
I don't know. I think he's
college age. Was the kid parked next to us? Because there was one kid who was parked next to us. His dad said he was.
He was checking his 400 meter time or something like that. Whatever. Yeah. So the gun went off, figuratively. They left. And, you know, we did some filming and whatnot. I think I went back to the truck, was dicking around with some stuff. And all of a sudden I see this one guy coming back. And I was like, how long was that? Where did he go? Like, did he go like halfway? He already went down and came back and he crossed. And I think I got him on the cross. I think I got the first three or four that came back.
I put him in the video. Yep.
Yeah. And I was like, this kid is a running machine. The guy behind him, also a running machine. They were like track stars in school and, you know, all this kind of silly shit. So,
well, the suck thing is they had their ceremony, which is fine, but I'm a slow runner. So as I was coming, I went and changed. And as I'm coming, after I changed, everybody's standing and I'm like, I'm running, make a hole. And
I was over because they were doing the ceremony.
I stepped because I had to run through the crowd because they were standing on the finish line to do the ceremony.
Yeah. The like, guy from, I think it wasn't the Humana people. It was the guy from, I think it was a local guy. Lehigh. It was a guy out in Lehigh or something like that. Yeah, was it Lehigh Run Club?
There's a group that's always out there because this is my second race at Harns Marsh. They're trying to incorporate Lehigh. They're trying to turn it to its own city so they can have
collect their own taxes. Which I don't think that the people of Lehigh really want to do that. But anyway, he was out there like, hey, you know, you guys got to, you know, one side or the other. And they wanted everybody over in the grass where the podiums were. But you know how that goes. Groups of people usually tend to not listen.
Mm-hmm.
Especially there's a select few that could really give a fuck less what anybody says. So, but I tried to tuck myself over by their event trailer and whatnot and and you know, get some. And I heard you coming down the lane there, and you're like, Mega, get out of the way.
I was like, ma'am. I was like, I'm trying to run. Like, I was like, ma'am. I was like, Mega hole. She turned.
Yeah. And I think I got one decent shot of you. I tried to catch it real quick as you were coming by right at that time too. But they kept telling them, like, hey, you know, one side or the other, or, you know, go over there or what. And, you know, you got people on the trailer.
And luckily,
side
I'm a slow runner. Imagine if I was like,
yeah,
one of the
like a fucking freight train coming through, like, hey, get out of the fuck. Especially people that take, I mean, I'm not saying that you don't take it serious, but those, you know, the people that are coming through, like, they want that first place finish, you know, those kind of people that have that drive, man,
especially the 20,
if any one of them were coming through there and people were in the way, they would have been screaming all to high hell. I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Especially worrying about their time and trying to get that first place.
It's like, you know, I understand you finished your race, but
yeah,
technically, our entry fee was a hell of a lot more than yours was. Right. We're still running the fuck out the track.
Right. Exactly.
You know, just because you finished your 18 holes of golf, I mean, you can stand on the pin of the fucking 18th hole.
Right. Well, and that was certainly, I'm sure, was, you know, a little bit, I was, you know, because once the ceremony was done and they announced everybody that was in their class, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they were, or their age group or whatever you want to call it. Once all that was done, I was started to walk back towards the truck, and people were, you know, pulling into the freaking, you know, into the, the running track and everything, like, you know, it's a parking lot. Yeah. It's a parking lot, but it's where they're supposed to run through. You know, that's where it connects, is that it runs all the way over where that spillway is and then runs through the parking lot and then back to the start finish on the other side. And people are backing their cars in. You know, there's, I mean, obviously you can't tell people, hey, you know, you can't park here. You can't move here. You know, you can't get, like, you just, it's public, so you can't really do much about that. But I mean, it was just a lot of people just no care. Like, there was some people that were like nonchalantly walking through there, and it was even in the parking lot. And there was this one big jacked up dude that was like, "Go away!"
Black dude,
huh?
Black dude?
No, it wasn't the black guy.
I almost put in the video of the black guy running. I was going to pause it, but save some gains for the rest of us. That dude was fucking ripped.
He was whacked out, dude.
He was all pecs.
He was a refrigerator.
He probably had a body fat count of like 3. He was pecs and abs. Some gains for the rest of us.
There was a white dude that was like that too. That was all yoked like that.
Yeah, the guy in the black shorts.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. But yeah, I mean, overall, cool experience.
Yeah,
well, you know, like I said,
at
the end, I think I told you too, like, yeah, you know, let me know when you want to do this again, because I'll definitely do some B-roll, I'll film whatever, you know, whatever you want to do, because it's a cool experience.
Funny thing is, I'm out there running, I'm like, get my phone, I'll text him, go try to record the 5K.
He's directing while he's running on the freaking, he's, you know, doing his cool down walk or whatever on the back nine, and he's sitting there texting me saying, hey, well, was one thing that you said, it was something or other about making sure, oh, he said, cut me a bagel in half and put some peanut butter on it. And then he's directing the freaking video and everything, making sure that I get all the footage from the 5K competition and all the finishers for that. So,
yeah. Well, I do want to say, your cell phone, I think either it's on its way out or your camera's fucked.
Is it?
The photos look great, but when you zoom in on them, for whatever reason, I don't know what technologically, because I never, and you'll see it on the video, because at the end I use your still frames as background for credits. And there's a perfectly clear rectangle through the center. And then at the bottom and the top, it's almost like a crosshatch almost. You can kind of see where it's a little blurry on the top. And it's on multiple pictures, not just on one. I don't know if it was the way the sun was hitting your lens.
Well, I changed it.
Perfectly clear in the middle. And then on the top of the bottom, it's just a little, I don't know if it's a filter you had on there, if your camera's taking a shit. Because I noticed on a few of them when I was editing the videos, like, well, that's weird. But it was only on the photos that you took.
From my phone. Like from the beginning or just any one of them?
A lot of them, it was easy to notice, like when you go back and look later, but like when you were taking pictures at the finish line and the Apex promo flags were in the front.
Yeah, yeah.
The dark flag was there. You can really see it because that dark color in the foreground, you can really see it on the bottom. It was just something I noticed.
See, I'm looking at them right now and I don't see any of that. That's weird. Because I did that intentionally because I did, I changed it to a 16 by 9
yeah.
so I could get a good landscape photo because I know that's one of the biggest things that you bitch about.
I saw somebody made a hat.
Turn your phone sideways.
I saw somebody had like a Trump hat that said, let's make photos landscape again. Funny because I remember when I worked for Stan Haney back in 2014, you know, we were celebrating with the fact that everybody's finally shooting in landscape.
Yeah.
Then fucking TikTok came out and fucked it up for everybody.
Right.
That's when I went back to Keystone, when TikTok got big again.
Yeah. Well, and you know, you get a setting on your phone in your camera settings now that's square. And that's exactly it's for Instagram and
yeah, because and whatnot, I too. You have to otherwise you're downloading the Square app to fucking put the white borders on all your pictures in order for them to be on Instagram.
Right.
Without any further ado, Morgan, hit us up with your question, sir.
Okay. What are...
yeah, whatever. Why all is it every time I go outside, my neighbor tells me to stay out of trouble? It's not like I got her daughter hooked on crack. Come on, man. Fuck that.
So I was thinking about this the other day, and I kind of posed this question to y'all to think about.
Sure.
But what are... the top three most, I don't know, the most important, most influential, most meaningful songs to you?
See, that's a hard one because it depends on the day, right? Just between us girls, I can get about 4 good weeks of mental health out of a 16-mile run, and then the demons come back. So it depends on when the last time I had a good run when I'm fighting my demon. So if you hear me listen to fuck a lot of Twisted and fucking Adam Calhoun, then it's probably been a while. But if I'm listening to fucking Demon Jones and I'm happy and I'm in a good mood. So yeah, that's a hard one. It's really a hard one. So, I'll let Mike go first.
So are you saying the most influential songs of all time?
You as a person, not
or just to me.
To you.
Personally.
Well, I mean, basically, it's not a question that there can really be a set answer for.
Sure.
Because everybody's experiences are different.
It's a personal experience.
Yeah. Okay. So I know what mine are.
Right.
And after we talk about it for a while, I'll share mine.
Okay.
But because I didn't tell anybody, I asked a bunch of people.
Yeah.
I've got a list here of, well, actually I got answers from the people that I asked personally.
Well, provide some answers. Let's hear some of those answers.
So my buddy, John, who is one of my groomsmen, he's like 6 months younger or 6 months older than me. His are How Great Thou Art, Amazing Grace, and The Dance.
Okay.
And then my wife, hers was the Hallelujah Chorus, the Star Spangled Banner, Amazing Grace. And then her runner up was Where Were You When the World Stopped Turning by Alan Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's kind of an age related thing. Because
sure.
9/11 probably means something much different to you than it does to me, Mike, because right. of our age gap.
Well, so, I mean, Pearl Harbor meant a hell of a lot more to our grandparents than it did us.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's true. And so,
well, that and actually, and even for that, I would say like 9/11 in particular would be, you know, it would mean something different to my son or like you know, than it would to me or you or something like that, because I lived through it just
yeah.
like you guys did. I was just a different age and I was younger
whereas
he didn't. And they're learning about that stuff in school now. So
the interesting thing is when it comes down to 9/11, I think there's only one song that anybody would even kind of associate with that. Right.
What would you think it would be?
Oh, that country song,
put the up Angry American.
Da, 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 da,
yeah,
Toby Keith. The Toby Keith song. I think that would be like the 9/11 anthem. I can't think of any other song that was. I mean, there's a lot of songs that are out. Okay.
For the time period,
that makes the most sense. Interestingly enough, I wouldn't say it's my most influential, but this kind of helped me dwindle it down. For me, songs are very. The easiest. I realized at a certain time that life is a series of cars. That makes sense to anybody? Your life is a series of cars because, you know, when you're in high school, you had a car that represents your high school years. When you're in your early 20s, you got. So life is a series of cars. Well, life can be also a series of songs. And so for me, for that particular time, like what's the song that sticks out for me for 9/11 is Rehab's It Doesn't Matter, because that's when it came out. And that's when I was listening to Rehab's Southern Discomfort. The right. crazy thing is that song was written, you know, before 9/11, wasn't written for the thought of that, but it has interesting lyrics on the chorus for It Don't Matter, which is kind of coincided with that time. And the chorus is, and it don't matter, and I don't care. I let my pain into the air because everything good is over there, and everything here is hard to bear. If that's not fucking 9/11, what is, right?
Yeah.
And so that was I burnt the shit out of that album at that time. But that was the song. Me and my buddy Jason, the one who sadly passed away right after COVID. I still have questions. He was the one who died in his sleep, and then like 3 weeks later, Hot Dog Chris died the same way.
Yeah,
who was a Stan Haney fan. They both died in their sleep. But that album, Jason and I listened to every morning driving to go build ambulances. Because that was right around 9/11. That's right when I got my divorce. That's right before I moved to California. So, like, that album was, like, my theme song. That was, like, my soundtrack. That's what I'm looking for. That album was, like, my soundtrack of 2001 from California. I didn't listen to it in California. But, yeah, so for me, at that time in my life, it would be It Don't Matter by Rehab. And, you know, even when I was singing it, it's like that line right there, it don't matter, I don't care. I left my pain into the air because everything good's over there. Everything here's hard to bear. That, like, was perfectly coinciding with what we're going through at that time.
Sure. Absolutely.
What's a song that would be influential? And maybe that might make it easier for our audience if you guys want to email us, info@d-410.com, or hit us up on our Facebook. Maybe it's a little easier to break it down into that sort of, maybe of a period. By all means, if you have one for your most influential for your life, by all means, let us hear that too. But maybe just breaking down something like that, make it a little easier. But is there another song you think of, Mike?
So, yeah, I mean, because, you know, it's so personal and it can be so subjective, you know, I'd say probably one of my most influential songs that really had an impact on my life was probably From the Inside by Linkin Park. Linkin Park was, and I'm heavy on the was because of new developments, but was one of my favorite bands of all time. I grew up with the band, and, you know, it was kind of an open, an opening. It was able to kind of open my mind and put words to some of the feelings that I had in my life, you know, through a lot of experiences and stuff like that when I was a child, and when I was growing up, and the things that I saw and the trials that I dealt with. So, that was one that definitely was probably the biggest most influential song that impacted my life. And it's hard for me. I can never pick a favorite anything, you know, and even in cases like this, it's so hard because I've been a music head my whole life. You know, we've talked about all kinds of different aspects of music. I mean, I've listened to everything. And it was really hard for me to sit there and think about, like, even just picking three, you know, that were the most influential or the ones that impacted me the most, right?
But I'd say that was the one that I came back to the most, because that was just the first one that instantly came into my brain.
That album was groundbreaking because at that time when it came out, pop rock was fucking dead.
Yeah.
Grunge killed pop rock. And the best way grunge, Gordon's friend Ed, sadly, who was killed by the schizophrenic homeless kid, he once explained, put the perfect definition of grunge rock. Anybody, what's your definition of grunge rock? It's rock and roll without guitar solos.
Yeah.
Prior to Nirvana, every song had a guitar solo. Every song in the 80s and 90s had a guitar solo. Every song. Didn't matter. Then grunge came out. So grunge was big. And then, you know, you had the underground stuff, industrial stuff, the Ministries and the punk rock, and we're listening the industrial stuff, Marilyn Manson's Something All American Family was out, but it was really underground.
Yeah.
But top 40 radio play eligible rock was struggling at that time.
Yeah.
Linkin Park came out in the 2000s. It was like, holy shit, what is this? And they had the little bit of the rap mixed in with it. And
just the new metal era, I think.
I wouldn't even consider them new metal. When I hear new metal, I think more of the harder stuff like Limp Bizkit, Korn, Deftones, Cold Chamber. I don't put Linkin Park into that. Sure. They're their own thing.
I could see that. I mean, you know, they definitely, I don't know. I've always kind of categorized them with like Limp Bizkit and Korn. Because, I mean, not so much Korn, because Korn was always a lot heavier and a lot, I don't want to say darker, because a lot of the lyricism is the same, because both of them as singers went through the same kind of shit. But
yeah, but Jonathan Davis, that hidden track on the first album.
Yeah.
That, when the lead singer's crying at the end of the song because he's talking about basically
that was
the kid.
That was Daddy, yeah.
Yeah, that was out there. Linkin Park, you know, it was kind of, you had to read between the lines, but that
Korn, yeah, it wasn't as in your face. Yeah.
I mean, that's when you heard that Jonathan Davis song, you're like, holy fuck, this dude's shit.
Yeah.
But, so to stick to that topic, I think another song kind of came out in that era a little bit earlier, and at least it was introduced to me, is, I really like Tom Petty's Time to Move On.
Okay.
It's off of, I think it was off his 1994 Wildflowers album, I think. Yeah, it's off Wildflowers. I really enjoy that song. I like that whole entire album. So the Tom Petty one is huge for me. Real quick, I don't think I've ever told this story to you, Mike.
Okay.
So I moved to California in 2001.
Yes.
Yeah, after 9/11.
Yes.
And I remember we've talked about my Uncle Mike before, not my Uncle Mike. My dad's cousin's husband, he looked like Mr. Bean. He always looked like Mr. Bean. And I was in Long Beach, and I remember I was getting ready to go to work at Sears, and my dad just got off with my Aunt Linda. Uncle John was his name.
Hmm.
John was a lawyer. And my Aunt Linda asked my dad if he was going to be in town, because him and Melody would travel a lot and he would travel for work. And he's like, yeah. She's like, well, we're going to be in Beverly Hills for a wedding. Now, they're from fucking, they live outside of Cincinnati, Ohio. I mean, they're, my dad's like, who do you know? Who's getting married in Beverly Hills?
Right.
John's college roommate's son's in a rock band or some shit. Oh, okay. And his son's getting married. And my dad's like, yeah, your Uncle John and Linda are going to be in Beverly Hills next week, because his college roommate's son's in a band or something, some Linkin Park or something like that. I never asked who it was, but basically
wow. My
Uncle John's college roommate's son is one of the members of Linkin Park.
No shit.
He was invited to Beverly Hills. John, I think, passed away, but I never had the opportunity to ask him which member of Linkin Park it was. But there's just another one of those, you know, it's a small world type things. And my dad's like, you ever heard of Linkin Park? I was like, yeah, I've heard of
it. Yeah, I think so.
Fucking everybody's heard of it. So that's my Linkin Park story.
That's
wild.
Yeah,
time to move on by, I had my Tom Petty period. It was probably in 96, 97. Tom Petty and Talking Heads both. If you want a good live album, Talking Heads, Stop Making Sense.
Yeah.
Great album.
I will die. Yeah.
I will die on this hill. The version of Psycho Killer on Stop Making Sense is far superior than the LP version of it.
Really?
I actually never really heard the LP version until I started playing Rock Band, and I was like, this is so slower than what the concert version is so much better. All their songs, that album, Stop Making Sense, is fantastic. If you guys want, you know, if you're curious about the Talking Heads, start there. I actually remember right in my senior year, girl I was dating, her mom let me borrow her tape deck, her tape of Stop Making Sense. And so I would listen to that in my tape deck. I had an Alpine tape deck. Yeah, buddy.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to steal an Alpine.
Let my Alpine play. song number two for you, Mike.
Again, I could only come up with that one because it was so hard to come up with even just three. I'd say probably another Linkin Park song. I probably would go with The Little Things Give You Away. That song was about actually Hurricane Katrina in 2006. And it was not from a perspective of somebody that went through it, but it kind of, it was, you know, almost like a third person view. And you know, the lyrics are very tear jerky and, you know, people like us who have gone through plenty of hurricanes, you know, it's very easy to relate to something like that. That was one that I always wanted to try and learn how to play. So that was another influential one that I'd say that I appreciated a lot. A lot of musical influence too, being a musician. Some of my favorite drummers, you know, like Neil Peart from Rush, you know, Jimmy Sullivan from Avenged Sevenfold, you know, obviously the greats, you know, Buddy Rich and all that kind of shit. But, you know, a lot of songs that really were that I could have picked a dozen songs that could have gone on that list for sure. It was just hard to pick, like, you know, just a few even. Yeah, I'd say that's probably my number two for sure.
For number three, just it's a newer song, and because I've lived through a lot of hurricanes, I will say Ian fucked me up pretty good mentally. Ian's the one that had the most impact on me, obviously because I had my father's house, but it's the most damage I ever experienced. It's a lot. 9 hours of taking an ass kicking is the longest ass. I mean, and for those of you in Florida, I moved down here 6 months for Hurricane Charlie. So I've been here for all of them. I was here for Charlie. I think I count. I've lived through six landfall hurricanes, not counting the ones that missed us. Ian fucked me up pretty good. And at that time I was, and I still am, not so much now, but I was really heavy into my Zach Bryan kick. Yeah. And around that time, Hey Driver came out. And I remember listening to that song. I was driving to my boss's house because he had the Starlink at his house and he had a generator and we were working out of his house. And I remember driving down Del Prado and just seeing everybody shit fucked up, power's out. And I'm like, listening to fucking the song. I literally start crying. I'm like, fucking, we got our ass kicked. I mean, I've been through a lot of storms. I remember when I worked at K-Rock during Irma. And I remember driving to K-Rock, and I would drive from Cape Coral through downtown Fort Myers up Metro and then take the long way. Actually, no, at that time I was driving through 41, and you could see how each area, North Fort Myers, Fort Myers, Estero, all that was affected. And you could see, and I mean, that didn't have much effect on me, but the lyrics on that song that kind of stands out on Hey Driver, it's actually the first two verses. Starts on third verse, it really gets to you. It says, "Hey driver, pull on over. I'm in a fight with God. This Carolina shoulder seems to place where I'm getting off. My daddy always told me never make a home on the road while your lady's sneaking out and your kids are growing old. Hey driver, I've been riding. this lonely way too long. All the love I had worth giving, I've spent on my songs. Hey, driver, the boys are gambling with more than just their cards, with their bottles and their drugs and their Bibles in their hearts. And so that song got to me too. So all Zach Bryan shit is so good, regardless of what you think of him personally. You know, all his lyrics are, they're fucking definitely heartfelt, and he's been through some shit too. So without any,
actually, I do have one more actually that I was just thinking of. It's actually a newer song that came out within the last couple of years, 2023, give or take. It's actually a song by a band called Sleep Token. It's a song called Are You Really Okay? And it is, that is a very impactful song for me. It's a darker song, but it has to do with third party coming in and, you know, watching somebody going through their darkness and through their fights and everything like that, and self-harm and you know, thinking of suicide and things like that. Yeah, I mean, one of the lyrics is, you woke me up one night dripping crimson on the carpet. I saw it in your eyes, cutting deeper than the scars could run.
Wow.
So, you know, that's definitely, they've been a very influential band lately for me, but that one in particular, I come back to quite a lot. So
without any further ado, Morgan, because you hit us with the old sneaky hook, leaving wanting more, it's time for your big reveal.
Okay, so my first one is it's like a hybrid of two songs. It's Chris Tomlin, a Christian artist. It's Amazing Grace, My Chains Are Gone.
That's a great song.
That's my number one, because that's like the basis for everything. You know, yeah. I cut like the great American poet, you know, Kid Rock said, I cuss like a sailor and drink like a Mick, you know, but
my only word for wisdom is suck this dick. Oh, no.
And yet we're talking about Chris Tomlin, a Christian artist.
but basically that's like the core of everything, because without God's amazing grace, there would be no point in me existing. Sure. Because I can't do what needs to be done on my own. And I believe that, you know, I've got something great waiting on the other side because of that.
Sure.
So that's like, you know, the basis of it. And then my second one is God Bless the USA by Lee Greenwood. And that comes from, you know, 19-year-old Private Long standing in the reception auditorium of Fort Dix, New Jersey, wondering what the hell I got myself into. And up on the big screen pops up the video for God Bless the USA. The Desert Shield was in full force. Desert Storm was getting ready to start. You know, it was, you know, things were getting ready to blow up. And the stress of that, coupled with the stress of not sleeping for 2 or 3 days, and then being there. And of course, they call us all to attention because the post commander, Major General James Worman, walks in. And here's 19-year-old Private Long with everybody else in the auditorium, not a dry eye in the place. And I feel somebody grab me, and it's the post commander, and the guy lays the biggest bear hug on me that I think I've ever had in my entire life. And he looks into my eyes and he goes, you're going to be okay, son.
That's
and he lets me go and walks on down. And I'm like, wow, you know, here's this guy, you know, who's, you know, the guy's like a general. I mean, he's like the top of the top.
Yeah, they're like, I think they're like 3 stars, aren't they?
Yeah. So I mean, that's always going to be an influential thing.
Yeah.
You know, every time I hear that song, I think about that. Right. And not to mention the fact that, you know, we are pretty damn blessed to live where we live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, even, you know, even if things get as bad as they can possibly get, this is going to be the best place to start it.
Yeah.
And absolutely. I mean, that's, you know, that's pretty important. And then my third one is a Star Spangled Banner. Cause
sure.
I can't hear that without,
the old tearjerker. You know,
yeah. I mean, it really is. So,
absolutely.
Those are my three, but I've got a quick side question.
Hold on, just because you're, because of number three. So on Monday I took off work because when I was originally planning this, I was anticipating having to run 32 miles, and I knew that Monday would be day two pains, and I knew that I wouldn't be able to walk. And so even though we only did the 25K and the 16 miles, I still took Monday off. And so Monday I was able to walk. My calves were definitely sore, but I instead of lounging around the house, I did grown-up shit. Like, I took Carrie's car to go get an oil change and some other stuff that I couldn't do normally because of work. But I bring it up to say this. First time ever, I stopped at Mission Barbecue, and it was 11:57.
Oh, yeah.
It was my first time being at Mission Barbecue at noon when they do the Star-Spangled Banner, and everybody stands and looks at the flag. That was pretty cool.
I didn't know they did that.
Yeah.
Every day at noon.
No shit.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that was, I've been there a couple of times for that. That's pretty good, man. I like that a lot.
I got to print this up. This is kind of a cool story. So I go to the Mission Barbecue down the street from my house probably once a week or so, just because high protein. And so I noticed when they get new decorations. And on the left-hand side, they have a new shadow box, and it had some medals. It had a wooden Navy carved-out plaque with the Navy logo and painted. And then it had the World War II round Navy dog tags. And Navy and Marine Corps were the only ones who used that style dog tag, so I recognized it instantaneously. And I took a picture of it, and I didn't realize until later the guy's first name was Preston, which was my middle name. But I took a picture of it, and I sent it to my new producer and co-host of What's the Scuttlebutt. They're both sit on the Navy LCI Association board.
Nice.
And I sent them a picture of this dog tag, and within 5 minutes, they had this guy's information of what he served on that ship, how many battles, how many people died on it. And so I went back to Mission Barbecue the other day and talked to the store manager. And long story short, I'm going to take that information and print it up on a nice heavy stock card and put it in a shadow box so they can display it next to the dog tag so people see. But it's like these two fools had that information in like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. That's awesome.
That's like wild. I had that information back before I got home, and I just started laughing. I was like, I think you guys would have it.
That's awesome.
I think it's time we have a drink. We have a bourbon in nearby. Mine's a wheated bourbon. We're gonna have a drink for the bourbon industry. Sad times.
I don't have anything. I didn't grab anything.
$9 billion whiskey industry in crisis.
Why?
As Gen Z drinkers shun bourbon tariffs and take toll. Gen Zers, particularly the cats who are in college now, you got to remember, we talked about this on the last podcast. They showed up for their freshman year, and then the next 4 years, they're kicked out of school for COVID.
Yep.
They don't. I saw a story last week that because 90s are coming back, a lot of Gen Zers are going back watching our movies like American Pie and Road Rules and Road Trip and all that. And even Animal House, the concept of house party are lost on them. They think house parties are the most scary, grossest thing. Why would you want to drink and be around? And so Gen Zers they're not drinkers. And so because of the tariffs and the fact that these Gen Zers in college, they're just kind of getting into the beer scene, right? They didn't have that. We all lived the beer scene in our high school years. The time you got to college, you moved up to making fucking mixed drinks and trash can with 15 different drinks.
Middle school.
And bourbon, and if you're Mike, middle school. But they have such arrested development in the social scene, they're not drinking bourbon. Kentucky's legendary whiskey business has experienced the worst crisis in decades, with major distilleries shutting down. Thousands of jobs are at risk as the industry struggle against declining sales, changing drinking habits among Gen Z consumers, and a damaging trade disputes. Three prominent Kentucky distilleries have collapsed into bankruptcy over the last 8 months, a dramatic downturn for the industry that generates $9 billion annually for the state. LMD Holdings, which operates Luca Marino Distillery, owes more than $25 million to creditors, while Garrett County Distillery faces nearly $26 million in debt. Kentucky Owl, owned by International Spirit Company Stoli Group, has also filed bankruptcy protection with millions of outstanding obligations. So, yeah, the bourbon, and I heard just restaurants and like bars and shit, they're suffering because the 21, 22-year-olds, they're not into the drinking scene.
Well, and even if they are, it seems like, you know, they like, because I don't think beer sales are plummeting really at all. I mean, I know we had the whole Bud Light thing there for a while, but I mean, I think a lot of them stick to beer, and they stick to the what the hell are they White called? Claw. The claws, and you know the seltzer drinks, mm-hmm. and all that stuff. Because it's like it's like drinking a fucking soda, and you get.
Yeah, they don't
kind of fucked up on it.
They're not down to learn to acquire the taste of beer. I mean, let's be all honest. Yeah. I remember my first Budweiser. I was still out of my mom's refrigerator down on the Ohio River. After two sips, I threw that shit away. It was gross. But you had to acquire the taste for beer, whereas a Celsius, a White Claw,
all a nice brand, ice cold beer.
Or in Morgan's case, a Bartles and James. You know, those go
old
down.
Bartles. Old Bartles.
Now, don't get us wrong. Gen Xers, we were guilty of it too, but we did it to get laid. We bought schemas and then put Jolly Ranchers in them and gave them to our girlfriend so they could loosen up. You know, we made fruity drinks too, but it was for a reason. The dudes weren't sitting there crushing Zimas.
No, yeah, no. Ladies drank wine coolers for the most part. Ladies and Morgan. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. So back to your point about COVID. Do you think that maybe it's not so much that they didn't get the taste for drinking, they just didn't get the socialization?
Yeah, well, it goes hand in hand, right? Because
we were on the fourth hole of the golf course with a keg and a 50 or a 30 gallon trash can full of ice.
Yeah,
you know, partying it up around somewhere.
Yeah, well, I'll say we were back into somebody's corn crops, so the cops couldn't see it.
It's the
COVID not going to house parties, and when they do go to house parties, they're talking to each other through their fucking cell phones anyhow, and so they just the whole social interaction aspect is just lost on this generation, and it's crazy. It's sad.
It was interesting. I was talking to a doctor for Sam, and I was like, hey, you know, this whole social interaction stuff. I was like, kids don't really do sleepovers anymore.
Mm-mm.
They don't get together. My son has had one kid over at this house, not even to stay, that he was just here for Halloween. We took him out. They did the trick-or-treating thing. They came back. He went home. My son came home with me, and that was it. They don't do the sleepover stuff. They don't do, like,
Granted,
the interaction is all through the phones.
Granted, Sariana is 5 years older than your son. She's 18 now. But when she was in middle school and high school, she would have sleepovers. But it was still, they call them sleepers. You open a door, one of them's on the Xbox, the other one's on their phone. So they're basically digital shit in the same room.
Right. You might as well. I mean, when I was coming up, I mean, we did. You know, I mean, there were nights. I mean, you know, I'm sure you guys did, you know, stuff like that back years ago. But I mean, there were plenty of nights where, you know, we'd stay up all night and we'd play video games, or we stayed up all night and smoked weed. And, you know, we did all kinds of stupid shit. But, Yeah.
It was funny. So, as you guys know, I grew up in a town called Grove City, and which in the 90s, it was like Cape Coral minus the canals.
Right.
Still under development, a lot of new neighborhoods, a lot of new construction, a lot of, you know, places to maybe take a lady friend to dip your finger for the first time. You know, there's plenty of places to go. But I remember they lived in Indian Creek, which was a new neighborhood. My buddy Sean Bennett
lived across the street from Terra Perigo, and they both had their birthdays on the same night. And so I remember 1 year, 2 years in a row, we had a sleepover, and both the parents were in on it. Basically, five or six of us would sleep at Sean's house. Now, Terra Perigo was far more popular than we were. They're definitely cooler than we were, but she would have five or six people, and we would toilet paper each other's houses and then run the neighborhood. And like, so the next morning, like, everybody's parents come pick up. My dad picked me up at Sean's house. His house is toilet paper. He looked across the street, Terra's house is toilet paper. He's like, do you guys do that? Nope.
I kind of had a little bit of a cool experience because my mother was here, but my father and my stepmom were up in North Carolina. So I got to kind of grow up in the best of both worlds.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I was. During school, I was in Columbus, Ohio. And then in the summer, I was living poor in Kentucky.
Right. Yeah. And it was kind of a similar experience where, you know, I was down here and, you know, we'd do the beach thing, or we'd, you know, run through neighborhoods and, you know, do dumb shit, or we, you know, stay up all night drinking or whatever. Or we'd smoke a bunch of weed, or, you know, do whatever we did. And then we'd be back in the mountains and, you know, we'd be up all night riding four wheelers through people's properties and pastures and shit. So I got the best of both worlds.
Smoking weed.
It's drinking all night and smoking weed. Same thing. Exactly. There were numerous times I got stopped by the cops.
Back when we were innocent though, like the middle school days, except for Morgan, who apparently was an early alcoholic. You know, we'd stay at night at our friend's house, and the thing to do then was, who can stay up all night without falling asleep? First, get the dick drawn on their foreheads.
Yeah,
four or five, you know, seventh graders at a house watching HBO all night. We had Super Nintendos and shit, but they didn't have it. It was just watching comedy. Waiting for the 80s reruns of like Ski School. There's a whole series of movies from the 80s that were made specifically just to have unnecessary tits in it for 13-year-old boys. So you had like the Ski School, Turkeys, Meatballs. And so you'd go to Blockbuster and rent all those and have titty movie nights and just stay up all night and drink and getting hopped up on Kool-Aid and fucking chips. And you're so happy when the sun came up. It's like 6 a.m. you were allowed to go to sleep.
once you got past about 11, 12 o'clock, once you get in that 1 or 2 o'clock range, HBO would have the erotica.
Skinamax, baby.
And old Skinamax would come out. Oh yeah, buddy.
For those of you who don't know, Skinamax porn was porn without the penetration. It was just a lot of tits and rubbing of pelvises together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Morgan and I are so old that when you stayed up past Johnny Carson, the fucking American national anthem came on, and then the American flag waved, and then the TV went out until fucking 6 in the morning. There was nothing to it. After Johnny Carson, they would literally play the national anthem, and then it would go to a test signal, and that was it.
Yeah, because they figured who's staying up, and what's there to watch. What do we put on?
Well, more importantly, they couldn't sell commercials to pay for the shit to play at night.
Right.
Yeah.
It wasn't until you got cable television.
Yeah. So, what's worse than waking up with a dick drawn on your face?
A dick in your mouth?
Or your ass?
Finding out it was traced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Morgan.
That's.
Mm-hmm. Mike's already answered this, so I ask you. If you woke up in the morning and your knees were dirty and your butt was hurting, would you tell anybody?
No.
Hey, you want to go camping next weekend?
Somebody just said that one at work the other day too. Because somebody else said the same one.
That goes back to like 1989. It's like the first I heard it when I was in elementary school. It didn't make any sense to me then.
Yeah.
Now I know.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, good times. Classy.
I remember my buddy Danny, who we used to stay at his house in middle school. His dad was a gunny sergeant in Marine Corps.
Oh boy.
So I learned at the early age about Mary, Mary, quite and Trary. And, you know, the lady who, once with a man from Peru. He went for a ride in a canoe. He dreamt of Venus and played with his penis and woke with a handful of goo. And then obviously we all know about the guy from Norway. Once was in Norway, his balls were so big. Now, once with a man from Norway, his balls got stuck in the doorway. His wife came along with a butcher knife, and now they're hanging in the hallway. Once with a man from Nantucket, his dick was so long he could suck it. One day with a grin as he wiped the cum with his chin,
As he wiped the cum off his chin, he said, "If my ear was a pussy, I'd fuck it." These are all. I learned these all from a gunny sergeant in the Marine Corps. we all heard the opening line on "Sick Arnold." Once was a man from Nantucket, but no one ever finished it. But I always knew. I always knew.
Oh yeah. That's like Dice Man's dirty nursery rhymes.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's so funny because these millennials are putting TikToks where they're showing their kids like the songs they listen to, and I'm like,
oh yeah,
that's got nothing on Luke Skywalker.
Oh yeah.
You familiar with Luke Skywalker, Mike?
From Star
Luke,
Wars?
No, Luke Skywalker was a rapper. This song came out when I was in third grade, fourth grade. No. I got a hold of a tape, and I had to play it on my tape deck down low. Hold on.
I don't know why I don't know why this is like very vague, but I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think I've ever heard of this before.
Yeah, that's right. He was a member of Two Live Crew.
Okay.
My mama and your mama. Oh,
so picture me in third grade with a tape that I got off a neighbor kid. Listen to this song. One and one. We're having some fun. It doesn't have the second half. It goes one and one. We're having some fun in the bedroom.
All of the night.
Two and two. I took off my shoes. Pretty innocent. Three and three, she undressed me in my bedroom all day. Four and four, we fucked on the floor in the bedroom all day and all of the night. Five and five, I put up her thighs in the bedroom. Six and six, that bitch sucked my dick. Seven and seven, went to heaven. Eight and eight, she masturbated. Nine and nine, she licked my ass. 10 and 10, bitch doing again. That's what I was listening to in elementary school on a tape right. deck. While my parents
and that's it. Not the worst of it.
Yeah. But yeah, that's, you know, so when you want to play your little Hoochie Mama song, sure. Nah, that's nothing. I'm like, yeah. But yeah. Before we wrap it up, I saw another one of these commercials. Actually, I'm going to go a different route. We're going to close it up on this. What are you more tired of hearing about? AI or fucking...
Get it together.
AI or Walton Goggins? Jesus Christ. Walton Goggins is on more commercials than fucking Shaq nowadays. It's like, you can't turn on YouTube without seeing a fucking
Walton Goggins. Is that the guy on the Walmart commercials?
Walton Goggins glasses, and then he was on the Shield back in the day, and then he was on Sons Anarchy.
Yeah, so that's the guy on the Walmart commercials now.
He is all over the goddamn place.
Show your shit, motherfucker.
You know, it's so funny because obviously we like YouTube ads, but I watch you. I have a job that allows me to listen to YouTube. I do work, and so I'll listen like podcasting on there. But for example, we use this app. It's a big app. It's a company, and I had to reach out to their help desk one day. So I Googled their help desk address, and now every single day on YouTube, I get commercials for. Say, motherfucker, I already have them. You're wasting money. And then there's another one I had to Google, and so like there's like three companies I'm already using, or companies already using. I'm getting advertisements on. It's like, well, it's not really effective marketing because you're advertising to somebody who's already using your services.
Yeah.
It's like, it's kind of a waste of money for them to advertise to me because I'm already using their services.
Well, they do a piss poor job of you know, targeting people, because I get ads for stuff that are totally unrelated to anything I'm watching or even my demographic.
Yeah.
So I don't know what, you know, I guess I'm not too worried about AI taking over the world just yet, because, you know, it can't get its shit in one sock.
You know, it's so funny. I'm at the age now where I'm seeing the need for technology repeat itself. Mike, you're probably a little young for this. Yeah, I mean, you were alive, but you weren't paying attention to the news. Around 2001, 2002, maybe, the government made a law where manufacturers of TVs had to put in an auto equalizer chip, because prior to that, these commercials would fucking people who'd produce these commercials would crank the volume. So you'd have your TV, your news at 40, and then the commercial would, and their reason is, well, we want you to hear the commercial in the other room. You know, the problem is surround sound speakers were huge at the time. You're blowing people's shit up. And so they literally passed a law where the TV manufacturers had to put a chip that would equalize all audio to the same volume. Well, clearly we don't.
They broadcast. Must not do that anymore.
I was going to say, clearly we don't broadcast TV, and most of us are watching off of YouTube, and so YouTube's real bad at that.
I heard, though, that they were supposed to abide by that as well, but they don't do a very good job at it. Because
I was just thinking about that today as I was sitting, you know, 2 feet away from the Bose radio thing that I use, you know, for my TV, and the video I was watching was, guy was, you know, repairing, I don't know, a Nintendo Switch or something, and it was really, you know, quiet. The guy is like this, you know, really proper, mellow Brit, and then all of a sudden a commercial comes on, and it's like three times the volume.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh my gosh, what the hell is this?
Yeah, the only problem with that is you'll have creators that don't know how to adjust their audio volume and whatnot. So their equipment is like they're talking like way back here. And you can hardly hear
them. Yeah, I suppose
that.
That's got something to do with it.
And
too.
You
got
to turn your shit up so that you can hear it. Because there was a video actually last night. We turned on the TV. And we were, because I have a Samsung TV in my bedroom, and we were using the Samsung TV Plus or whatever, and I didn't realize that they had as many channels as they do for free, where you could watch whatever you want to watch. And I was scrolling through, and it was playing Independence Day on one of their movie channels or whatever. I had to turn it all the way up to 100. 100. I mean, and it ticks one by one, not, you know, 5, 10, 15, all the way up to 100, just to barely be able to hear it. And Melissa was laying there. She was like, you better turn that down. Because as soon as a fucking advertisement or whatever come on, that thing is going to explode. And it was absolutely ridiculous. It was the same kind of concept where it was like, you know, the content was so low volume wise. And then, you know, the advertisements and everything are normal volume sometimes.
If you talk to Richard, the engineer, who used to be the engineer from Beasley's, he would tell you that Imagine Dragons was one of the first songs that was so compressed that when you would load it in the system, you wouldn't see peaks. It was just a big fucking square. And like all the sound engineers thought their shit was fucked up. But no, it's just the way that Imagine Dragons produced
what, their radioactive song or whatever it was.
Yeah, like, you know, when you put something in Adobe Audition or
whatever,
you see the peaks. No, it's just a big fucking block because it's so overmodulated and so blown out. And that was the other thing too, like when I worked at K-Rock, you'd play like old ZZ Top songs or old Pink Floyd songs, the volume of which they recorded were so low compared to, you know, as the time went by, those peaks got bigger and bigger until it was a big old block.
Well, nowadays they, you know, a lot of artists and a lot of studios and whatnot, they focus so much on that audio quality, you know, because back then it was just, they were recording on tape, you know, 2-inch reels and stuff like that. So, you know, and speaker quality back then was not that good. Think about your fucking speakers from your 91S10 versus your speakers in your Tundra, you know, stock speakers too, not anything that was, you know, added later or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah. It was way different. I mean, your shit back, you know, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, couldn't handle the music that gets put out today.
I made that joke to somebody. It may have been you. I'm talking to somebody about trucks. Said, yeah, I remember when I got my dad bought my brother his 91S10, and which I ended up taking over. The thing was base model, and by base model back then it meant one mirror, no bump, no radio, no power steering, no air conditioner, roll up windows. Like base model was basically, this thing's barely road legal, here it is, lowest price. Now base model is, okay, you don't have, you know, automatic steering, and you got fucking, you don't have leather seats.
Yeah.
It still costs $45,000 fucking dollars.
Exactly. My S10, it was a 91S10. It was the Tahoe. It was a long bed. It had the 4.3 with the 5-speed, 4-wheel drive and all that. But it had roll up windows. It had, you know, manual locks, it, you know, all that shit. I didn't even think the column tilted. I think it was a fixed column. And, yeah, it was a very basic truck.
Single cab. When you mean
single cab, yeah, it was
your bench seat. You had cab. Two. When you went from like all the way up to all the way back, that was a difference between 3 inches from your seat and the fucking back wall.
Yeah. Oh, my shit had to be all the way back too, and it had the bench seat, and you know it had a lock in it so that you know it wouldn't roll forward. That shit was fucking broken. That shit. Anytime I'd hit the brakes, the whole fucking bench would do this.
Yeah, I think the Volkswagen, we may have to trade that sumbitch in for too long. My headliner's singing down now. And it's like, you can't blame it on the age because it's parked right next, it's a 2018 and it's parked right next to a 28 fucking Tundra. And it's day and night on the, and the Tundra has like 179,000 miles on it. The Jetta has 60.
Yeah.
Headliner's hanging down. The fucking rubber seals around the windshield are cracking out. And they both.
We could fix that headliner though.
I looked, $800 for a new one.
Now fuck that. We'll take that bitch out, get some fucking, what color is it, tan?
No, it's fucking whitish gray.
It's whitish gray. We'll get whatever color that is, fucking put some spray adhesive on there. And fucking.
I'm an old pro with 3M. I used to work 8 hours a day.
There you go.
But the problem is that A pillars, airbags. The B pillars, airbags. And yeah. It's a sunroof. And so I'm more worried about when I take that bitch apart dealing with the airbag shit.
True.
But because I look
true,
and the sunroof cover, it's hanging down, and now the Christmas trees are coming back, and it's just like fuck,
but, ridiculous.
Yep, it's sad. Quality's definitely gone down
for sure.
Well, that's gonna wrap it up for this episode of the What's in Your Head podcast. Please head over to whatsinyourhead.com, click on the links, and listen to the show. I took down the merch links for a while because it became aware that our vendor was. Is not getting shit sent out. I had three different people buy shirts like back in July that their orders haven't been filled yet. And I reached out to Teespring. They said they're having issues with their vendor. So I took the links down so no one can order anything. But obviously you can find our shows. Email us at info@d-410.com or hit us up on Facebook and Instagram. And as I said earlier, the new running videos up. Go to youtube.com. Look for D410 Media and find all that information there. And hopefully we'll have some clips of the What's in Your Head.
This has been a Digital 410 production.